What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, as always, Shane Told, as I bring you into the backstage conversations that I have with other lead singers. And today, we have a great episode with Jimmy Wizard of Higher Power, a newer band, a band that's undergone some changes recently. They recently signed to a major label. They just put out a record that's awesome. And it was really my pleasure to speak with Jimmy, a great guy, a good old bloke from the UK. And this is a great episode. So sit back and enjoy with me right now. I'm on tour with my band Silverstein. We are in Charlotte, North Carolina at the moment, celebrating 20 years of Silverstein, which is very exciting. The tour has been going so well so far. We just finished up the East Coast. And yeah, we're heading down south to the nice weather. Oh, it was a beautiful day today. And yeah, there's a coronavirus. That's a thing that's happening right now in the news. Maybe you've heard about it. And to be honest, I don't know what's happening at all yet. We are playing it by ear out here, as I'm sure you are too in your life. But yeah, I don't know. We've been washing our hands, and it's about all we can do. And hey, it is what it is. I want to remind you guys, of course, you can always get in touch with me. Feel free to email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read all my email. And check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. A lot of new members lately. Very cool stuff. Basically, that is what keeps this thing going week after week for free. People contribute money, and it goes a long way. And check it out. Yeah, you get a bunch of bonus stuff, too. It's really good. The link is leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. I want to thank everyone that tuned in last week as well. My conversation with Lizzie Hale of Hailstorm. I knew it was a great episode. The feedback I got was amazing, too. So if you missed that one, go back and listen to it. And then maybe go back and listen to the other 213 episodes. Yeah, it's just really great. I've been able to do this for so long. And week after week, I get really excited about doing this. And I think that the last few episodes have been so good. So yeah, thanks for all the support. Thanks for all the love. Of course, if you do like the show, other than joining the All Access Club, which really helps, tell a friend, tell a loved one, go on iTunes, write a review, preferably 5 stars. That all helps kind of spread the word of this thing. And make sure you hit that subscribe button as well so you don't miss all the awesome episodes coming up in the next little while, including Bert from The Used. That's coming up real soon. I know that's a long-awaited guest, so you could expect that coming in the next couple weeks, and many, many more. Anyway, let's jump in to this week's episode of my conversation with Jimmy Wizard of Higher Power. Jimmy.
Hello. What's up?
What's up, man? Hey, sorry about the mix-up with the time.
Dude, it's all right. I think it's my end's fault. I was like, I'll make sure it's 12 o'clock Tucson time. So, like, and I made a plan to drive to a Starbucks for 12. And then, yeah, it's all good, though.
God damn it. Classic. Yeah, this shit always happens. Yeah, no, you're in a part of the country that's, like, fucked for time zones, too. Like, Arizona... I think it's Arizona. They never actually change time zones. So sometimes it's 3 hours behind the East Coast. Sometimes it's 2 hours. Because I'm in the Eastern time right now, and it's just after 1 o'clock. So hey man, whatever. It's thanks for taking the time. Yeah, thanks for taking the time. I know you guys are. I mean, it's a busy time for your band. Congratulations on the new record.
Yeah, thank you, man. Yeah, it's a whirlwind, but it's fun. So
yeah. Well, it's been out for like a week now, week now. It's called 27 Miles Underwater. And you know, I have a thing about second albums. It's talked about on the show all the time that pretty much no band has ever made a bad second album, you know, historically in music, and has come back from that. No band has ever recovered from a bad second record. So, you know, you guys being such a always an interesting case because you're very difficult to pigeonhole musically. Was there a lot of pressure going into this album, especially with, you know, everything going on behind the scenes?
I think for me personally, I viewed it as kind of like, this is our first real album as a band, because Soul Structure was basically like me, Alex, and Louie kind of just jamming songs. Sometimes it'd just be me and Alex. I'd teach it Louie, and then sometimes it'd just be Louie and Alex, and he'd try and teach it to the other two guys. But you know, it was very disjointed,
right?
Like Soul Structure to me was very like rushed and not very well thought out on our side. We just wanted to get a record. We're just hungry to get a record out. So I went into 27 Miles with the with the mindset that it's like, okay, this is the real go. This is the real go at it. Like Soul Structure was like a practice, you know, and and I was like, so we took every mistake that we did doing that record and, you know, the whole process, and just was like, right, well, we're not doing that again. This is our real shot at it. Like, let's make a real LP that's like really thought out. And, you know, we all play in a room together and we all put everything into, you know, and so that was my mindset going in. So I wasn't really nervous. I was just like, cool, I fucked up before. Like, now I know what to do. Let's do it. Like,
well, yeah, I mean, you guys have been road dogs. I mean, road warriors for the last couple of years, at least. You know, since that record came out, and you've learned a lot. But what's always, you know, I found very interesting is you guys have been very, very credible. You've been looked at as a cool band, you know, a band's band. You've gotten a lot of great tours. And you've seen what, you know, some of the most successful bands, you know, in the scene, in the genre, whatever you want to call it, have done. Have you kind of been sitting back watching those bands and say, okay, this is kind of how the pros do it?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, we, for some reason, we've always had like a lot of support from our like friends and bands. And then like I said, we get to tour with like, you know, we toured with you guys. Yeah. We toured with all these bands that like have like a solid fan base and have had for a long time. So like, yeah, literally the whole time was just spent like watching how these bands operate, because that's initially the goal. Like, it's not like what I'm trying to do, but like, you know, everyone's goal in the band is to have that, to have like a longevity, and you know, to be able to go and play a city and have, you know, like 500-600, obviously more, but you know, at the bottom, and like,
yeah,
be able to fill out a room of like 500-600 people and, you know, have a good headline show. So yeah, like I've just always watched how bands operate, and you know, like I said, I'm not trying to sell out to do it, but it's also a world I've always been very interested in, and you know, anyone starting a band would want those basic goals for their band. So yeah, right. I've just always watched and learned this. I've always done that. I've always been the person to like, I'm in some ways I'm easily manipulated, but like in other ways I'm always the person that if I know someone's better at something than me and they're doing it better, or they're like more successful in what I'm trying to do, I'll always try and take in as much information as them from them as I can.
Like, absolutely.
So I've just watching how it, you know, being with these other bands, it's like, I want that, like this is what, you know, who wouldn't want that? So how do you do that? And then just trying to figure it out and make those steps.
Well, signing to a major label is certainly a step in that direction. I mean, you used the term selling out. I mean, if this was 20 years ago, everyone would call you sellouts. You know, a hardcore band signing to a major label. No, I'm serious. I'm just being serious. I mean, these days, people don't seem as, you know, they don't seem to care as much about those kinds of things. I don't know if they're more educated in the fact that a lot of this shit is just run by, you know, corporations and major labels anyway, no matter if you're on what label you're on. But, you know, that's a huge step for you guys to do that. And there's always pressure that comes with that as well, just because you have such a huge team of other people, you know, kind of looking over, you know, your shoulder, you know, kind of seeing what you're doing.
Yeah, this is it's like, I don't know why a band wouldn't sign to a label like that. You know, I said selling out, but I mean that in like the, like, I'm not gonna try and write pop songs, you know, have someone else write my songs or something. But like, you know, I think nowadays, yeah, the line for selling out is been so far moved, like. Signing to a major label as like a DIY band isn't really that big of a deal. If anything, people have just been stoked for us. People are like, oh my God, like Roadrunner, that's crazy. Like, I used to listen to Slipknot. Or like, do you know what I mean? I've not seen any, oh, you signed to a major label, like you sold out. Like, we've not had any of that so far. So yeah, I think nowadays, like, selling out's a very, very different, like, you know, different world. You'd have to really do something out there to sell out. So right. Signing to a major label is just like,
right. But you know, I come from a time, and you're a hardcore kid too, and you know, probably more about hardcore than I do, despite me being like 10 years older than you. And the reality was,
I'm 28 though.
Okay. Well, I'm 38.
I'm not young.
Yeah. I know how old you are. But seriously, I mean, there was a time when I remember, you know, bands would start singing, like hardcore bands would start using clean vocals, and people would call them sellouts. You know, I mean, any slight change, it was like, bring out the pitchforks, you know? And you know, there is some of that on your new record. You guys, I love the new record, by the way. I think it's awesome. I totally hear that, you know, what you're talking about. Like, this is your first chance at like kind of a cohesive sound. Taking a stab of what Higher Power is, but there are some points in this where I'm like, am I listening to a hardcore band right now? Like, because I almost feel like I could be listening to something on the radio in the 90s. Like, there's so many shifts between genres that I sometimes just I love it, but sometimes I don't even know what I'm listening to.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. Like, I obviously coming from hardcore, like. A very, very deep rooted hardcore. That's basically, I've never played in a band that isn't a hardcore band. So it's like that world to me, I love it, but it's also very like, there's no longevity in a lot of current hardcore bands because they're just trying to sound. You pick a sound, you pick an era, and you sound like that.
Right.
And as soon as you stray from that, people are like, oh, it doesn't sound like Breakdown anymore. Oh, you guys don't sound like Leeway anymore. And I noticed that from every other band I've been in, that like, we never got further than a 7-inch or maybe one LP. And I was like, why is this happening? Like, why have my bands got no longevity? Like, you know, I'm always trying to start a new band. So I was just like, I don't want to just make a hardcore record. Like, I never went into it like being like, oh, we're gonna make a hardcore record. Like, yeah, the record definitely wasn't written from that perspective of a hardcore record. We just wanted to write music. Like, we all listen to so much music.
You can definitely tell. Yeah,
so we just listen to so much types. It's like, well, why are we gonna try and write a hardcore record? We don't just listen to hardcore. Like, obviously, yeah, we're hardcore kids, like at the root of it all. Like, you know, we're just hardcore kids trying to experiment, really. But it was the mindset was never to just write a hardcore sounding record. We just tried to bring in all of our influences together. So
absolutely. No, there was a few points where, like, one of my favorite bands of all time is Snapcase.
And there are points
when I'm like this moment in this is like, this is so Snapcase, like your voice and the music and everything. I'm also hearing, you know, a lot of Deftones, which I can imagine would be a big influence of yours as well.
Yeah, big.
Or maybe Glassjaw as well. So it's really cool hearing those elements come together. I'm really enjoying the record. Now, this is the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast, and we're both singers. Vocally for this record, I feel like you took kind of new strides. What was that like for you? Just kind of finding your voice, and the voice that's going to be, what you're going for on this record. you're kind of your first major label release.
It was hard. It was definitely hard at times because I'm not like a naturally good singer, and I'm still learning a lot. Like, I've only been singing since Higher Power started, like about four and a half years ago. So I'm still figuring a lot of stuff out, and but I also knew I had to push myself. Like, the way we were writing songs was geared a lot more towards melody. So I had to be like, I've really got to step up, and and it also made it a lot easier for me that when we were writing, it wasn't so much me just before when we were writing, I'd jam on guitar and I'd bring riffs but this time the way we did it, where everyone was there, and we did like pre-production and we did demos,
right,
which was a new process for all of us. Like, I could really actually just focus on this, like singing and the melody. So, and I think touring a lot definitely helped me figure out, just singing every day. Like, we tour so much, it's like, I get to sing a lot. So it's obviously kind of in a sense, I obviously still don't think I'm a good singer, but I can definitely tell that's fast-tracked any progression I've made.
Well,
just being out.
Well, I mean, I listened to your fucking record, and you are a good singer, so don't say that. But it is natural. Well, it is natural to, like a lot of people tell me, on this podcast, they say, I'm not a lead singer. I started out playing guitar, playing bass, playing drums, whatever.
Yeah.
I was the only one in the room that could kind of either carry a tune or was willing to do it. And I found myself here, thrown into the fire. And for you, for you, it's only been a few years and now the major labels are calling, and all the focus is on you in something that you didn't spend decades and decades practicing. You're talking about you're in your early mid 20s when you start,
trying to attempt.
You are with all this pressure on you. You're doing awesome.
It's because it's I sang in some bands when I was like 14, 15, but I was never singing. I was just shouting.
Right.
I'd probably tried to sing in my bedroom and be like, oh, I'm bad at this, and never tried again. Yeah. But I honestly wish I'd kind of, I look back and I'm like, damn, those times I probably tried to sing or play a Blink-182 cover or something. Like, I wish I'd just gone, I should probably just keep practicing, I'll get better. But I was like, oh, I'm not a natural singer, I'll just carry on playing guitar and bass. Like, that'll be my focus. Yeah. But yeah, now I look back, I'm like, damn, if only I'd not in my mid-20s, I'd be in a band that gets signed to Roadrunner and I have to sing in it. But it's cool. It's fun. I like challenges as well.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's fun.
That's a challenge, all right.
Yeah, and when I want to learn something, I get super obsessed. So I went for a couple of singing lessons before doing the LP, but then I actually went for a couple after, and I was like, fuck, I wish I'd had after doing recording the record, I went for a singing lesson, and then I learned a lot more. I sang the songs with the woman and I learned so much more, and I'm like, fuck. But then it also is cool because it gives me room to progress on the next record, I guess.
Absolutely.
But
who did you see?
There's a woman in England called Stevie Lange.
Okay.
And she's in her 60s, I think, but she was married to Mutt Lange, if you know who he is.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So that's his ex-wife. So she was teaching all of Def Leppard and how to sing.
Right.
She
was the vocal coach. So when he did all this, because he's a, John Mutt Lange is a huge, producer. He's done, he's millions and millions of albums sold. I'm sure I can't think of any records off the top of my head that he did. but like huge ones from back in the 80s. So what the story is, he would call his wife in to help these guys learn to sing.
Yeah, yeah, I think that was pretty much it, because she was already a singer. Like she's insane, and she was singing like rock and roll stuff, and like she showed me a bunch of old videos from back in the day, and she was like, I was trying to figure out this sound as well, and then you know, and then she obviously like met Martin and was doing all that. So yeah, she can do everything. She's like a 60-year-old woman. She can scream and do this crazy, crazy vocal stuff. So yeah, so I went to her, and then it's like, you know, so that she definitely helped me out a lot. It's all, you know, it's all just, you can learn, I guess, if you put your mind to any. It's what it's taught me as well, being a singer, is like, you can figure pretty much anything out if you put the time in. So,
well, I love that mentality, man. Yeah, and just for people listening, Robert John Mutt Lange has recorded everybody from Shania Twain to Michael Bolton to Def Leppard to Bryan Adams to The Cars to Muse to Nickelback to Maroon 5. He also did AC/DC Back in Black. No big deal.
Shit,
that's quite the resume for a producer.
It's funny because like she in her little studio, when bands used, she has all those bands autographs on the wall, because I guess you know when bands used to give out the white, the white background photo, you know, the promo shot on, and
sure,
bands was kind of, she kept going like, oh, you need to give me one of those, like you need to give me one, I need one for my wall. And I was like, oh, I don't think you understand, like, we're not, that doesn't really happen anymore, like no one asks my autograph.
I'll tell you, Silverstein, we're old enough that we have those. Yeah, we have.
Dude, that's sick.
Yep, when we started, that was a thing, definitely the 8x10 black and white promo shots with, it has like the name of the band and then the record label on the corner.
I promised her one. I'm gonna make one for her.
We made them like more recently, like in the last maybe like 4 or 5 years. We did it for like a VIP item.
That's sick.
So that like for a signing, we had something to sign that wasn't like a huge poster. People have to carry around. So yeah, you should do it. It's cool. It's different. You know, it's a throwback.
I mean, yeah, because I used to see them when I was a kid. So I was like, you know, I'm gonna make her one for sure. Cause she's a real sweet woman. She's cool. So.
Awesome. Well, speaking of producers, you worked with Gil Norton, and he's no John Mutt Lange, I guess, but he's no slouch at all.
No,
you know, what was it like for you being, you know, like you said yourself, an inexperienced singer, having that dude listening to your voice through the monitors the same way that he listened to Dave Grohl and Jim Atkins of Jimmy Eat World and Davey Havoc? Like, these are all, you know, records that Gil Norton's made. What was that feeling like? I mean, that guy's a legend too.
It was so, I was just like, I'm not ready to record with this guy. Like for the first week was like, I was like, I'm not ready to sing like on a record made by this guy. Like it was actually a very big mental struggle for me, because I knew I could sing the songs, but like as soon as I got in the booth, I just froze off, and I was like, you know, I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing, and I feel like I was trying to, you know, I feel like he was used, I thought everyone he worked with would just go in and do it in like one or two takes, because he's making these world-class records, you know what I mean? And so in my head, I was like, oh, I'm going to go in, it's going to take me like 20 takes, and I'm going to, my voice is going to crack. But then after spending time with him and doing pre-production, it was like, he was just so nice, and he just, you know, was so reassuring.
Yeah.
That like by the end, I loved it. Like, you know, like I said, once I got to know him and we spent time together, and you know, you just realize that everyone's human and no one's doing it all in one take. And
yes,
you know,
yes, absolutely.
Cool.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And, you know, what a lot of people don't understand too is when you're a singer and you're in the booth, you know, a lot of times a lot of other music has been recorded at this point, and everyone's kind of been waiting for this day where Jimmy or whoever is going to sing their first note. And so you're there, and usually the whole band's there. Everyone's listening. The producer's waiting, and like you feel naked, you know,
yeah,
you feel like, you know, you feel so exposed And like, you don't know how loud that vocal is up in that control room.
No.
And it really is like a feeling that I think until you do it as a singer, you can't really explain. That kind of feeling. And it's weird. It's not a pressure as much as it's just it's very uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's just, you're so self-conscious in there. Like,
yeah.
And like, I'm not, like, I feel like a lot of people, but like, would have spent time recording and, you know, but I'm obviously like when it comes to recording vocals, I'm pretty inexperienced. I've only recorded in a studio like a couple of times. So yeah, I was like, oh, I'm thrown in at the deep end here. Like, fuck. But once I got over that mental block, he was fine. And Gil's so nice. He like, you know, he's like, we'll turn the lights down. He got me some Christmas lights. And,
yeah. You know, I do that too. Like, I do the light thing too. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was so sick. Like, and I wore these shoes every time I recorded, you know, just little dumb things to help me get over that mental block. But you know, yeah, like once you become friends with someone, it's cool. Like, you can get over it. But yeah, that first week was like so tough. Like, just trying to just be like, all right, like, you know, just getting it done, and just the confidence in it. You know, as a singer, like, if you're not confident in what you're doing, like, it makes it 10 times harder. So once I'd built that confidence, you know, we did the lights and I had my special shoes and all this. Like, it was
Mama said it, they was my special shoes.
My recording shoes.
They could take me anywhere.
They were actually shoes that, like, I had that I was like, these are so wild. I'm never going to wear them outside. And they were real comfy. So I was like, I'm just gonna wear them when I record, and then they kind of just became my, like, you know, like, good luck charm in there. So,
hey, man, whatever works, right?
Yeah, you know, you gotta find something that works. So,
oh man, that's great. But I mean, this new sense of melody within your music, and I know we've touched on it a little bit already, but that's a big undertaking when you're used to just kind of shouting in a band, and it's more about the power of it, the rhythm of it, the attitude of it, and of course about the lyrics. And once you take out the aggression and the shouting, you know, and that sort of like ramming whatever you're trying to say down somebody's throat, and you start putting it into a melody that could be played on a fucking violin, you know, or like any other instrument, it adds such a different emotion, but it also changes the way that you probably were expressing yourself. How did you find that, you know, going into this record, you know, taking singing, the approach to singing so much more seriously, I guess. How did you find that, you know, in terms of the writing side?
I honestly just listened to a lot of records where I felt that the emotion really came through in the melody. So, like, people with very exaggerated voices, like, you know, like Glassjaw, for instance, his voice, he really brings, like, Daryl can sing, but it also sounds so like that you can hear the emotion in the singing. Like, it's almost like cartoonishly, like,
right.
emotional. Like, same with Alice in Chains. Like, you can really like hear, like, when he's singing about being like a drug addict, you can hear like that in, it resonates, but it's like, there's still melody there. So I just really listened to a lot of music that I found that in, and just really tried to figure out, like, you know, like, just listen to it and just let that be my inspiration for, like, you know, when you just listen to, I just listened to that nonstop, like all of those bands I'd found, I really just only listened to that and just let that be my only, like, my only reference point for it. Just so that's what I had. And I think that's just how I found the, you know, the way to do it. Cause when that was all I was listening to, that's all I knew, you know? So like, I was like, oh, I want to sing this bit like this. So I kind of blocked out any other music that was like that. And I just really tried to focus on trying to get this emotion across in a way, but with melody. And yeah, I just found that helped a lot. And I think just like, I put lyrically as well, I put a lot of things very bluntly on this record that when I did sing them, they kind of did bring up those emotions. I didn't really try and cover anything up with metaphors or try and write anything in a very fancy poetic way. I really just tried to lay it all out very bare. So when I did, you know, read it back and sing it, it did evoke that emotion in me. So I think that made it a lot easier. And it was very, and a lot of the subjects I was writing about were very fresh as well. So
absolutely. That all matters for sure. I got a fan question here really quick.
Oh, I have a fan. That's cool.
You do. You have many fans. The question is his last name really Wizard, and has he seen the movie The Wizard?
Yeah, it is Wizard. Alex, my brother, plays drums in Higher Power. It's actually Wizard. I don't know where it comes from in my family. That side of my family where it comes from.
Well, obviously you were
a bit eccentric. Obviously Wizard.
That's badass. Well, it's funny, you know, my last name is also like a regular English word. Told, T-O-L-D. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's not sexy like Wizard. You know, I mean, but people still ask me if it's a stage name. Like, if I could choose anything in the world, why would I fucking choose that?
Yeah.
But people ask me. Yeah. So, dude, you're never going to, that question, you're going to be asked that forever. I mean, you probably have been.
I kind of think it's worse that people think it's a stage name. Like,
I know what you mean.
I'm like, I didn't make up a name for myself. Like, this is my real name. It's just how it is. Like, and it's honestly worked out great for me in life. I guess I'm lucky to have had it because, you know, it's obviously interesting. It's a conversation point, and it probably gets me out of some weird situations sometimes with like border patrol and police and stuff. So, you know, I think sometimes it lightens the mood. I'm like, it's Wizard. Like, you know, as a kid, I was obviously like, oh God, why have I got this weird name? I already look weird enough. Like, got this big gap tooth. Like, this doesn't help. Like, you know, but then the older I get, you know, it obviously becomes an interesting thing. So yeah, I guess sure. I can't be too mad about it.
But have you seen the movie The Wizard? That's a good question.
No, I haven't. I'm not very good at watching movies.
Okay, well, The Wizard, if anyone doesn't know what The Wizard is, so it's a movie from, well, the early 90s, and it's with Fred Savage, you know, from The Wonder Years and all that actor. So it was a promo. Basically, the whole movie was paid for by Nintendo, and it was a promotional movie for when Super Mario Brothers 3 was coming out. It's literally a commercial for Nintendo. And what's really actually interesting though is the kid in it is named Jimmy.
Oh wow.
And as long as I remember the plot correctly, the plot is this kid Jimmy, he is like the wizard and he's really really like really great at video games. And they bring him into this, and this is like, dude, this is 25 years before fucking Twitch came out, okay? But they bring him into this forum and he gets to like play Super Mario Brothers 3 for the first time, like him against these other, you know, video game wizards. And that's the name of the movie. And it's probably terrible looking back.
Yeah.
But at the time, I remember I saw it in the theaters like opening day because I was like obsessed with Super Mario. I was like 12 or something. And, the movie is, I don't know if it's worth watching, like seriously watching, but I'm going to go back and check it out. Cause I bet it's hilarious.
I was like, what's a wizard got to do with Super Mario? But that makes sense now.
Yeah. That's it.
I'll try and watch it, but honestly, I'm like, my attention span is so bad. I suck at watching movies. Like, people get so mad at me then when they're like, oh, have you seen this like basic movie that everyone's seen? Like, I don't know, like Back to the Future or something. And I'm like, I've never seen it. Like, like Lion King. I've never seen Lion King. Like, I'm just so bad so at watching movies.
So you haven't seen Forrest Gump?
I've tried to watch
it. Okay, so you got my special shoes reference at least, I hope. It's funny. It's amazing what you can gather about a movie without actually seeing it, just from it being referenced all the time.
Yeah, I just know Forrest Gump because of the Bubba accent. Like,
Right.
You know, like that's, you know, that's it. Like, and the Forrest Gump accident, like, I know so much about it just from that alone that, like, I did try to watch it once. I can't remember how it ends at all, so I must have just zoned out or fallen asleep. But
it's yeah, it's a tremendous movie. It's one of those movies that I think I came out around the same time as The Wizard. Actually, it would have come out in like 1994. So, you know, I saw it when I was like 12 or 13 years old, and I guess I would have been 13 years old. And it's one of those movies that, like, you watch periodically through your life, and as you gain more like life experience, you can kind of take something away from the movie every time you watch it. I love when art can do that, whether it's film or books or even music.
That's a big thing. I really want to start getting into watching movies, because I get asked a lot, like, oh, what books or movies inspire you? You know, like, I have friends that are like, oh, this movie inspired this artwork, and I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm missing out on a whole world of things by not having watched so many movies growing up. But so, like, I'm trying to make a conscious effort to watch more movies now, to because I've started to realize how inspirational they can be for people. Because as a kid, I didn't really,
As a singer, it's a really great thing to do when you have a day off on tour. Just because you go into the dark theater for a couple hours, you don't use your voice, like, you kind of just rest your voice a little bit, which is nice on an off day, and just kind of take something in and distract yourself a little bit. I love going to see a movie or even two movies on a day off. So look into it.
I'll start getting into it.
There you go. There you go, man.
My mind.
I got a couple questions. I do want to talk about you being such a acclaimed and successful and prolific tattoo artist too. You've been doing that for a long time.
Yeah, like since 7 or 8 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah, a while, man. And it's like here's the thing, like, I honestly, all so what I'm doing now, playing in a band, touring full time, is what I always wanted to do. But it's obviously hard. Like it's not a very lucrative business. So when I started tattooing, it was at a time when I wasn't in any bands, and, you know, things weren't really working. Like, a bunch of my bands had broken out, up. I just moved to Leeds, and I was just hanging out at tattoos. You know, I'd always been interested in tattooing, and I'd been getting tattoos from like a young age. But I kind of just fell into it, to be honest, as a 20 year old kid, someone's offering you a job where you don't have to wear any kind of work uniform, you can work your own hours. I jumped at it, like, and it's cool, and it's given me so much. But it's funny, because now in modern life, I love tattooing, it's given me so much, but it's like, I'm like, oh, I actually really wanted to be in a band, so like, I'm gonna try and push that. So like, you know, I haven't really been tattooing full time for the past few years, so I've really been focusing on this. But yeah, it's fun, man.
Do you have fans of your band try to get tattooed by you? It must happen.
Yeah, I get kids come up at shows and be like, oh, have you got your machines with you? Like, I'd love to get a tattoo. And I'm like, I never bring my stuff on tour, just because it's too much responsibility to take care of it and not lose it, or if the van, we've been robbed. So I've never really bought it out with me, just because I'd hate to have the responsibility of losing my like thousands of pounds worth of machines that I probably won't be able to afford to buy ever again. So I don't really bring my stuff out, but yeah, I've been tired a bunch in between tours at home since between December and January was the first time we had like 2 months at home in the past few years. So I actually got really back into tattooing because I had the time, and, you know, it was really fun again. And it was cool to come home and actually be able to tattoo and focus on that again for a bit. It was really fun. So yeah, this past few months I've been quite busy with it. but obviously now we're back out on tour for another few months.
Well, with the success that I think 27 Miles Underwater is about to have, I think you're going to have all kinds of people, all kinds of fans asking you to tattoo Higher Power or something from them on you. And you're going to have to be like, am I cool with this? Is this weird? I don't know. I don't know if I should do this, but I think it's rad. I mean, people come to me just for like, they want me just to write something, you know, on a piece of paper to get tattooed or like whatever. But if I could actually tattoo it on them, I don't know if I would. That seems strange.
It's scary.
Something scary about it.
Doing tattoos in itself is like a lot of responsibility. You're putting something on someone forever. Yeah. So like, you know, but it's, I've kind of always tried to keep them separate just because I know I don't have time to do both at the same time.
Right.
And, you know, I'd much rather focus on Higher Power because I can tattooing. I can just tattoo when and where. Yeah. Like, you know, so I can, it is like, you can do it at your, like, I've been tattooing out of my kitchen between this tour because I've not had time to sort out like a guest spot or something. And I can do that because I have everything. And I obviously know enough about sterilization and, you know, like all of that side of it. You know, and I can't, so I can do it anywhere. I've got the means. So it's cool. Like, so I've always tried to just kind of keep them separate. And again, because it is like, I'm not sure how, whether it's like, would I even, if someone came to me and was like, will you do me a Higher Power tattoo? It's like, I don't even know if I'd do that. Like, right. I'd probably be like, I've got so many band tattoos that like it, at the time I love. And like, it's not like I hate them now, but I'm a bit like, I kind of wish I didn't wear that on me all the time. Like,
yeah, you know. Hey, I mean, that's the whole thing about tattoos is like, they're of a time, right? Yeah. I mean, and they don't go away. Frank Carter, he does like, he's so into tattooing. He does it like all on the road too, doesn't he? All the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't know how he does it. Cause like touring is hard. Like, it's probably just me not having the mental capacity to like be focused on two things at once. But I don't know how he does it where he tours and tattoos. It's just like, it's they're long days, man. Like, you're tattooing all day and you gotta go to a show. You know, so absolutely. Like, fair play to him for like pulling that off. Cause yeah, like I said, I think it's something that I've just never tried to do. Cause I'm like, I don't think I have the mental capacity to, you know, just really pull both off at the same time.
Yeah, it does seem like a lot. Well, Jimmy, I know you guys are heading on the road. You're heading to, is it El Paso tonight?
Yeah.
It's a long drive.
El Paso.
Long drive. enjoy Texas and the rest of the tour. Anything else to tell the people before I let you go?
No, I don't think I have anything profound to say. I'll tell you something, that I actually listen to this podcast when I'm home and I walk my dog. So it's kind of cool to actually like be interviewed.
Happy to have you, man. I'm really, really glad that you enjoy it. Thank you.
Yeah, I listen to like, I spend a lot of time listening to podcasts, walking my dog. So I just, and this is one that I actually do listen to. So dude, it's actually kind of cool to be a part of it now.
Well, thanks, man. So. Thank you so much. Well, if you do listen to the podcast, then you know I always play tunes at the end. So what Higher Power song from the new record shall I rip for the people?
Oh, that's a hard one.
At the moment,
I'm really loving Lost in Static because we just started playing it live, obviously, and it's fun. Like,
I love it too. That's my favorite song from the new record too. Yeah. So
let's go for that.
Well, let's rip it. All right, here it is. Lost in Static, Higher Power on Lead Singer Syndrome.
Static film, the space between us and our energy is there, but our energy gets wasted. And every time you come around, there's always blood in your mouth. And I'm left with a bad taste. And I wanna spit you out. And watch our world disconnect as you blast off. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
is music. New music from Higher Power. A great new record is out now. Go check it out. I want to thank Jimmy. I want to thank Amy for setting this up. And I want to thank you for tuning in this week. I want to thank all the members of the All Access Club for keeping this thing going. Hit that subscribe button. I know I tell you all the time, but it's important. We will be back next week with a brand new episode. And of course, check out my band Silverstein on tour right now, celebrating 20 years. I will see y'all next week. Peace and love.